Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes with DailyStraits.com. I am your host, June Romley. Today we have a special guest, Brian Reedy, the CEO of Gamer Advantage. So raised in Eastern Michigan, Brian's life took a dramatic turn at the age of 10 due to type 1 diabetes diagnosis. His battle for survival, coupled with his love for Nintendo 64, profoundly impacted his perspective on health and wellness. Brian's journey led him to Eastern Michigan University, where he studied film studies and broadcasting. He ventured into broadcasting with Detroit's pioneering FM gamer radio talk show. Although the project was short-lived, it fueled his determination, leading to a shift to finance, where he honed his skills in marketing and management. So his transition into the eyewear industry was a pivotal moment. It sparked his interest in integrating technology with eyewear. In 2018, Brian founded Gamer Advantage, focusing on enhancing gamers' well-being through the innovative technology. As the CEO, he dedicated the developing products that support gamers in maintaining a healthy balance between gaming and rest. So thank you so much for dialing in from the US. I believe it's quite late in the evening. So how are you today, Brian?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you so much for this. I have the product. You sent this to me, I think, from San Diego, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much. It's great. There's also a clip-on, which you can, you know, clip it on, and but we're not doing that today. So, okay, let's start with the first question. What inspired your transition from finance to eyewear industry? So you were in a day job, okay? You worked in a day job, and suddenly you had this calling. You wanted to do something completely different, which is eyewear industry. So we spoke about this, but maybe you can, like, tell the listeners what you actually, what happened, like what transpired, the change?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is I was working for a Fortune 50 company, you know, great benefits and great pay and all those things. But I kept hitting my head against the ceiling when it came to just being different. I was always bucking the processes and kind of known for not following the rules. And while I never did anything that I shouldn't when I was in finance, when I saw this opportunity to join this family business, In a similar kind of management, sales, business role, I was just like, this, stop working for the man and work for another man, but one that's not driven by the stock market and all these other outside influences. I felt I could have more impact on a smaller business than I would be able to make visible in a large company.
Okay. So, like, what made you want to start Gaming Advantage? Were you like having a Jeff Bezos moment where you decided to quit your full-time job and go into business cold? Or did you have a business plan with a business partner with some money on the side and, you know, a really well-thought plan before going into this? And did you find like a gap in the market? Like, what was the story behind Gamer Advantage?
Yeah. I mean, I was making blue light eyewear for other people in my role, so selling it to them. And I just didn't love that I was doing it for other people. And I didn't love the marketing behind it. So I spent some time really researching what is blue light eyewear, how does it impact our sleep, all that stuff. And it just dawned on me that there are things that work out there. They're just not being marketed or manufactured or sold correctly, specifically to a community that I love so much. I'd be lying if I said we did any real sophisticated planning or market research. As the gamer, I knew what was out there. I knew what the options were. I was confident that we were just going to do it our way. And I didn't really care what everybody else was doing, because that would have forced me into a category that I wasn't interested in going into. So we just kind of, against all odds, started it. And did it with what was in my head. And I just advocated for it along the way. And once the product started getting out and people were buying it and they were like, oh my God, it does actually work. That's crazy. And still to this day, like, our return rate's like 2%. So once we got the product out, that's when it started to really form into a real business. And I would say at that point, then yes, we started to put together some plans. I mean, you know, it was one piece at a time. We were slowly but surely putting the business together. It was not a well-organized business plan with like a 12-month outlook where we went to somebody and said, hey, we need to raise all this money. Here's the proposal. We didn't go through any series rounds, any funding in that manner. We don't have any silent investors. These are the two owners, myself and my business partner of Gamer Advantage, are strategic and active, and I have a full-time role in the company to match that. So
what was the first MOQ? Like, what was the minimum that you got the first round? And also, right, did you sell it on a website, your own website, or was it on like a partner with Amazon or somebody that's already has a clientele?
No, it was our website exclusively right in the beginning, and we built the business and drove the traffic through our partnership program by partnering with Twitch streamers and YouTube vloggers and all sorts of different people who create content, and showing them what we have and trying to create an arrangement in which they could go out and advocate for our product. That kind of launched us. We did come out with a really interesting product right before COVID, that it was an anti-fog spray that I intended for people who wear glasses inside of VR headsets. And because everything we come out with had to work, in my opinion, it couldn't be like rooted in this BS snake oil. Our anti-fog worked really well. And when the pandemic hit, after about 12 months, we became the number one selling anti-fog spray in the country. So that was through Amazon. It would have never happened. I mean, there were points of the day we were selling 5,000 bottles a day during peak pandemic. But when it comes to the eyewear, it was as guerrilla as it gets. It's, you know, people who weren't gamers were buying the anti-fog. But to earn the trust of somebody in this community, I knew what it would take to earn my trust. Like, you're telling me to buy a $100 pair of glasses, like, it's going to make me a better gamer? I'm like, okay. Like, I get it. So I just kind of talked in that manner for a long time and said, listen, just try them. And if they don't work, I'll give you your money back. Like, I don't know what else to say. And that ML worked for us and still does today.
So what was the initial investment that you and your business partner put in?
Yeah, so the two biggest investments we had, which were both not mistakes, but done in the wrong order, is we partnered with a nonprofit to launch the product at one of their events and did like a $50,000 sponsorship. Which I later learned in business, the best strategy is big sponsorships come with big revenue, even if they are charitable donations. It was a good way to start off, and it was a good way to like be live with people and get them to test our product. But that was the first expense. And then the packaging, I spent way too much money. I had this crazy vision for the packaging. It was this beautiful box with magnets on it and this acrylic stand. And I mean, it was gorgeous, but it was expensive. And a funny side note is it weighed 1.01 pounds, which put it into a different class of shipping, which ended up costing us way more money than we thought. So I'd say all in, you know, it was under $100,000 to start the business, but then it was just taking every penny that was coming in from both the eyewear and primarily the anti-fog and just pumping it back into the business to grow the team and grow this network of community members that we had put together.
Okay, one last question on the startup, right? So when you manufactured the products, right, since it was just the two of you, were you sending it to your house and putting it in the garage and selling it to prospective buyers, or did you have like a warehouse? What was your approach? Like, you know,
yeah, kind of. I mean, a little bit. I know you asked about the MOQ again. I'm not avoiding that question. It was something like, I think our first order was like 600 or 700 pairs of glasses. You know, luckily our arrangement with the lens company is that we could kind of make them on demand, like kind of on consignment. So that was super helpful. You know, we're a fully certified ophthalmic company. We do prescription. We have to maintain compliance. We have to be FDA. We're FDA regulated. We have to go through certain testing. So we were never really able to do it in our garage. It has to go through an optical lab because we've basically offered prescription since day one. So this isn't a drop ship type of product. Pretty much every order that comes in is custom made to that order. And 30 or 40% of our business is prescription. So it's a big chunk. Now, non-prescription eyewear, like, you know, also what you would see on Amazon, some people are able to manufacture that in mass quantity, but those frames and lenses are not of ophthalmic quality. They're not meant to be worn for very long, and especially not out in public where there's the risk of getting hit with something. And that's a very serious thing because you're wearing glasses all day. Like, if it hits you in the face, it's got to be protective. So we follow all those compliances. So it's always happened at the lab. We were definitely out of our house and out of a storage unit and all of these other things, shipping fog away. And we eventually rented a warehouse. We did that for a little while. And then as things finally slowed down, we were able to sublease the warehouse and get back to working remote. But it did get a point where we had to get a facility we could operate out of. It wasn't that expensive, though. We're making enough to pay rent for, you know, $3,500, $4,000 a month. And we just did it temporarily. And it worked.
Awesome. Okay, so we spoke just now, and you said that your brand, Greymint Advantage, doesn't really have a competitor. But so I just wanted to know, right, how does Gamer Advantage addresses the specific needs of gamers? Since, like, did you do a survey and ask all these gamers or it was just basically something that you just came up with because of years and years of being a gamer yourself?
Yeah, I think my friends are gamers. I'm a gamer. I'm not an idiot. Like, I know how the industry works, and I mean that in the nicest way, but I think what a lot of companies have done is kind of idiotic. They know nothing about the industry. They know nothing about gaming. They put gaming in the name of some sub brand thing they're trying to do, and they try to appeal to the audience. So you're a chair company. You think if you start a gamer chair division, you'll be able to sell to all these people. You're an eyewear company. I mean, I've seen dozens of massive multi-million dollar, $100 million eyewear brands try and start gaming divisions and not succeed. And I think that the thing is what I can do is relate to some of these things that gamers are both being accused of and suffer with. You know, there is a high level of anxiety and pressure in the gaming industry. There is a lot of depression. There is just a lot of mental unbalance when it comes to, and people are very honest in that community. So it's kind of a community where people are reaching out looking for help. And it was clear to me that it was almost impossible to be a content creator and sleep well because you had to stream at these late hours when everybody's consuming content. And it was really hard to be somebody like me who was working a full-time job, had kids, and be able to game. And I think people look at gaming like, oh, you're a loser if you're a father and a business owner and you play video games. And I just absolutely disagree with that. And I think the community knows I disagree with that. And those are the things that separate us from what everybody else is doing. You have to trust me first, and then you'll try my product. And I think that nobody's arguing with the idea that all this bright light is not helping us sleep. Like, that's not really the argument. The argument is, why would I use your glasses over somebody else or some other treatment? And mine is because I wouldn't make them for this community if I didn't genuinely believe in them. I wouldn't wear them myself, and I've been wearing them every day for the last 5 years.
Okay,
and I track my sleep. You know, I wear a sleep device. I track my sleep. I see that I'm watching it for myself. That's the best thing I can offer.
Awesome. Okay, so the other question is a follow-up to the one that you just mentioned, a bit of it. So the challenges you face in making it a trusted brand. So basically, this is marketing. You know, marketing is a lot of money. Sometimes you see the benefits and sometimes it's just a waste of money. So what kind of, like, so now you've been in the game for 5 years, like, selling this. So what are some of the things that work in terms of marketing and doesn't in making in taking Gamer Advantage to the next level?
Yeah. Well, we have to what we know doesn't work is being an eyewear brand and marketing with generic lifestyle eyewear focused ads on Facebook. Like, I can tell you that doesn't work. What I've learned is that the more human and the almost more me we can sound when we're talking to our customers, the better off we are. So our email has to be really strong, and our content creator community, the Gamer Advantage family, the partnership program, that's a very crucial part of what we do, because all those people are out there talking to thousands, tens of thousands of people on a daily basis, talking about our brand. There's social media marketing, but back to the paid ads. I mean, here's the thing is that we're doing things in the industry that both eyewear companies are duplicating. You know, there's all sorts of very large brands bidding against my keywords of my own company name on Google and all those fun things. We're on the charts of other major eyewear brands about how we stack up according to their product and whatever BS they make up about us. And so people know we're here. But the other things that are happening is people are copying some of the things we're doing, like the town halls we do and a lot of these community events we participate in. So I wish I had a crystal ball to say, like, what's next. I think the gaming advertising in gaming has gotten insanely expensive because of all this kind of big money around the professional esports and kind of all the big, big streamers. And it's shadowed this really awesome, hardcore group of content creators that have always been there and have been, you know, the core of this community forever. So we continue to work with those people in any way we can. But this traditional marketing, like just doing ads on Facebook and Instagram, that doesn't work for our brand.
Alrighty. Okay. So innovation and practicality. So how do you balance it with your product? So you did show us the fact that, you know, the tips they bend, right? So what other things are coming in, like, for 2024?
Well, you know, like I said, everything has to be comfortable. The technology for the frame is just a holder for this amazing lens that we've created. I mean, I've added these things to make the best possible, most durable frame that I can for somebody for the best possible price. I think what you've seen from us over the last several months is this growth in our lens offering. So we have a focus lens, we have a sleep lens, we have a dream lens. We're working on other lenses that help with other things, but where we're focused right now is just continuing to spread that core message for Gamer Advantage, because while we've been very successful, there are still a lot of gamers that we can help. So we're trying not to get too distracted with new styles and new this and new that, because what we need to do is continue to grow our reach when it comes to this frame that I'm wearing, the frame that you're wearing. It is always has been our flagship product. And I don't think there's any reason to, I mean, this is a stretch, but in our sake, reinvent the wheel.
Great. So how many SKUs do you have under your brand? Like,
oh God. Too many. You know, we have to stock. So when you talk about SKUs available on our website, I think we have, you know, 8 different styles, some in 5 different colors. I mean, we have hundreds of SKUs on our website with all the accessories that we have and the apparel that we have. We offer readers, we offer prescription. And then when you actually drill down to like our inventory, when you offer prescription eyewear, you have to have dozens and dozens and hundreds of diopters and different cylinders and all of this different combination of lenses so you can accommodate somebody's prescription. So on the back end, hundreds and hundreds of SKUs. Customer facing, probably under 100, but with the combinations of this color frame and this lens, you know, is it dream and is the frame red? Is it focus and is the frame blue? I mean, there's just really an endless amount of combinations of stuff you could probably purchase on our website.
So you don't have a problem of unsold stock, right? Because of the different kind of SKUs that you have.
No, I mean, not really. We've definitely had styles that are duds. There's no doubt about it. But we've done enough volume and developed a good enough relationship with our frame manufacturers that we can really handle the basic MOQ of any style and sell through it. It's just, will we restock it? And what we found time and time again is people want a subtle, nice frame. They don't want bright pink. They might tell you they want bright pink because they think it would be so cool to have bright pink. But then when it comes to actually buying it and wearing it every day, it doesn't, unless it's like part of their like get up for their character or whatever personality they're being. But for the most part, everybody says, oh, you should come out with a bright red frame. And like, oh, okay, should I? Because my years in optical tell me that's like what everybody says, but nobody actually buys. So we've done it. We've done it just to show people like, all right, fine, here, you want it, here it is. And you don't, you kind of know what you're going into before you do it. So we really haven't shot ourselves in the foot too bad on that kind of stuff.
Okay, awesome. So what role does your personal health journey play in your company's vision? So I did talk about you having that, you know, that thing, diabetes type 1. So how did this, like, you know, is there any connection or anything in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a gamer my whole life. And like you said in the beginning, I mean, they were using video games as a form of therapy when I was in the ICU recovering from a very near-death experience in my diagnosis. And, you know, being 10 years old and having to take 4 injections a day and prick your finger, you know, 5-10 times a day and go back to school. And, you know, video games were definitely a huge piece of recovery from that. You know, fast forward, I'm 37 years old. I've been diabetic 27 years. I'm in the best shape of my life. You know, I work out 3 to 4 times a week. I watch what I eat. I'm not perfect. As a type 1 diabetic, I have problems all the time, but I'm not losing feet or eyesight. I don't even wear prescription. These are non-prescription glasses. I'm very fortunate where I am, and I think a lot of it has to do with this continuous progress I'm trying to make. I didn't always sleep well. I mean, God's sakes, I used to smoke. Like, you know, there's so many things that I've learned that you don't realize how big of a difference they make until they do it. And I think it was about 4 years ago or so when I really started taking exercise seriously. And I'm not talking the BS, like I walk my dog, like that's not it. I'm talking like actual raising your heart rate, you know, real calibrated workout. And after doing that for about a year, I was like, okay. And then I really started to feel the sleep changes and drinking more water and all these little things. So they play a huge role, because I'd be a total hypocrite if I was saying these glasses helped you sleep better and I didn't sleep like a baby. And I sleep like a baby for the most part. Of course, we all have our moments. I got 2 little kids, you know, it happens. But I sleep good, and I credit part of it, not all of it, but I definitely credit a big part of it to this eyewear we've developed. But I also credit it to the other things that you have to do in your life to maintain your wellness. And I'm an advocate of those things too, but I can't sell everything, you know?
All righty. Okay. So, okay. How do you see the intersection of gaming and wellness evolving? So, okay. Gamers get a lot of hate from the public because you're sitting at home in front of the TV and you're playing games and you're not going out and, you know, doing all the activities, like, you know, going for exercise and all that. So, but gaming is also a very important industry. It's a $1 billion industry. So there's no way this is going to go away. So basically, how can the two evolve, you know, together in a nice
way? Well, it has to. I mean, it's, you know, the industry is worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And I think, like, the thing is, you incorporate things like MetaQuest and, you know, Ring Fit and these things that make you active. And that's great. But the reality is, being sedentary isn't good. So sitting at your desk for your job is equally bad as gaming. And the other thing, watching TV, doing homework on your laptop, those are all sedentary events. So I think what's important to realize is it's not gaming. Gaming has nothing to do with what's going on with your health. It's how you spread your day out. You know, if you're working all day sitting down and then you game all day sitting down and you do everything sitting down, like, yeah, it's going to be negative, but it wouldn't matter if you replace gaming with watching Netflix. And what I see a lot, you know, specifically in parents is, oh, they don't want their kid to game, but it's okay if their kid is watching TV. And it's like, or it's okay, the kid is doing homework until 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's like, listen, what's on the laptop screen is irrelevant to the impact it's having on their health. So I think that there's been an intersection. I think there's been a lot of lip service from a lot of major brands in the gaming space saying they're advocates for wellness and they haven't done jack. I think the focus has been too much on the fame and glamour, and we haven't given real consideration to the fact that the average esports player probably retires at the age of 22. You know, Tom Brady can win 7 Super Bowls, or I think it was might even be more than that. But, you know, you can play till you're 45 years old. You can play in the NFL and play football. But that we can't make it in gaming for more than 3-4 years at a time as pros, because the stress is too high, the lifestyle's too hectic. So I'm seeing a shift, but it's coming from the bottom. I don't think there's been enough help from the top, like you would see in almost every other major activity like that. You know, any other major sport or any other level of celebrity, sleep would be one of the first things they focus on, that type of wellness. And it just wasn't what we led with. In gaming, the best analogy I can give is the NFL. You know, it took them 20 years to put a thin piece of leather on their head, and it wasn't until 60 years later that they actually started taking wearing helmets and football seriously. We're kind of going about it the same way. It's like, let's go grab the money, grow it as fast as we can. We'll worry about all the physical and mental ailments after the money comes in. Well, that's where I think the industry's at right now. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, so Brian, you've been there, done that. So what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs in the gaming industry, especially if they're having a hard time, you know, wanting to start, like, you know?
Well, building a network, first and foremost, you got to make a, you have to have friends and allies in this industry. You have to be willing to put your money where your mouth is. You know, it's good to make friends first and then lean on those friends for advice on, you know, what do they truly think about it? I think there's a lot of people in this industry that love sharing, like, what makes a great contribution to gaming. I think if you put a tweet out as an entrepreneur about an idea you had, you'd get some feedback about it, and probably the most brutal feedback you've ever gotten, but at least that's the stuff you're going to have to answer to. So I think building the network is the biggest thing, and really ingraining your, you know, if you're naturally a gamer, I think you'll find the success as you build your network. If you're not a gamer and you're trying to get into the gaming space as an entrepreneur, I'd get one on your team pretty quickly, because there's some serious nuances of this industry that are so important to understand, or you can burn through money really quick. And we've made big mistakes. I've learned that. I didn't always know that.
You know, you mentioned about the tweet thing and writing your ideas down. Some people are afraid to share their ideas because they're scared they'll get stolen. You have any comments?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you never do it, what's the difference, right? Rather somebody steal it and actually go do it than you just sit on it and not share it with anybody. I mean, I get it. And I think you have to, like, figure out what stage you're in. But, you know, most people aren't motivated enough to do that anyway. So I think that you have to, if you're not going to publicly manifest it, you have to do it for yourself. I mean, you there's nothing else that's ever going to do it for you. So you get to a point where it's just really, you're like, F this, we're doing it. Like, I don't know what, you have to pull that one eventually. You cannot dip your toe. Here's the problem with entrepreneurs, in my opinion, is that there's two kinds of entrepreneurs. There's the one that understands that when you invest $100,000 in something, you don't collect a paycheck until you make that $100,000 up. And then after that, hopefully there's money left to put food on your table. But the entrepreneur that you might see in gaming has a little bit of a sense of entitlement sometimes, where it's this idea, it's like, well, I'm willing to do it, but only if there's some kind of guarantee. Only if, like, I'm confident or absolutely assured it's going to be successful. And that doesn't exist. And if that's your mentality going into it, that you need some type of assurance, then forget it. If you're willing to risk it, then you probably have something.
Okay, great. Okay, so what are the future plans for Gamer Advantage? So, like, maybe you can talk about the first quarter of 2024. Like, do you have any new SKUs, any new collabo, anything?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, we, first quarter of 2024 is going to be a focus on getting back to that community-based content, that story origin, story-driven content. You know, we have some changes that we need to make, given that 2023 was a tough year, a down year for us versus what it was the year before. But I think, you know, we're dealing with inflation and we're dealing with a lot of things that impacted the business. I mean, we have plenty of meat left on the bone for sure at Gamer Advantage, but I think we have to tighten our belts a little bit and make sure that we're not the ones who are as impacted by some of these events that are both happening specifically in the gaming industry and externally, just in the economy in general. And we're prepared to continue to ride that wave. So I hope there's a correction coming for a lot of people in the United States right now. I mean, it's kind of a messed up financial situation. Interest rates are very high. Cash is king. It's tough. And so I don't think we want to take any big swings or, you know, go too crazy at a time where there might not be a chance to recover if you put yourself in that situation. And that's the kind of guy I am. I'm a risk it kind of guy. And right now is a really dangerous time to risk too much, in my opinion.
Also, okay. So final question. So it's a really nice question. It's like something that I would ask: personal gaming experience that has been particularly meaningful to you.
All right. Playing Red Dead Redemption 2. I played through the whole story of Red Dead Redemption 2. Depending on how you play the character, it changes the outcome. You can be bad, you can be good, you know, those kinds of things. And I just thought the story mode was so impactful and amazing. And even more importantly to me, the soundtrack was just epic. I just love the music. I cried at the end when the character died at the end of the game. And I just never really had that level of, I mean, I've had like some emotional feelings in games, but I've never felt that way about Mario dying or anybody else. But when, man, when that guy died, like, and he had this like revelation at the end, his lines were better than most movies I see. And it really helped me. It was at that moment that what I realized is I probably played that game for 80 hours to beat that game. I paid $60 for it and got 80 hours worth of value that I would put hand in hand, hour per hour, is just as valuable as any movie I've ever seen. So, you know, you pay $20, $30 to go to a movie, it's 2 hours long. You pay $60, get 80 hours of entertainment plus a soundtrack out of a game that you can be so immersed in. It's like you're there. Nothing. I mean, that was one of the best experiences I ever had in video games.
Awesome. All right. And to wrap up, Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Your journey from battling a health crisis to leading a successful tech-focused eyewear brand is truly inspiring. So thank you so much for sharing your insights and experiences with us. And any final words or anything that you'd like to say?
No, I appreciate the opportunity. If you want to follow us, you can find everything is at Gamer Advantage. Twitter is definitely our most popular channel. Sometimes you'll catch me streaming, but that's pretty random. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we appreciate if you'd give us a chance when you're thinking about how can I sleep a little bit better so I can game a little bit better.
Awesome. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in to 30 Minutes with DailyStraits.com. So Gamer Advantage just ships to Australia, and I will put the link below. So stay tuned for more engaging conversations in our upcoming episodes. Thank you.